Argue, talk, talk, talk. Exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Exaggerate, why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
And yes, I am Karen Cataline. I'm proud to be your host of Spouting Off. Good afternoon to all of you in whatever time zone you're in, if it's Pacific, if it's Eastern, if it's Mountain. This is Thanksgiving week, Tuesday, November 21st, 2017. And I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving. I'm really looking forward to it because I have lots to be thankful for this week and this year, as a matter of fact, and I hope you do. At my house, we like to say that we don't need Thanksgiving to be thankful, but it's always nice to have a holiday. I've always loved Thanksgiving because it is such a non-denominational holiday and everybody, in America at least, can celebrate it. Other countries have other dates for Thanksgiving, but almost everyone has a harvest day. And the idea of abundance, and there's so much, I'm beginning to sound like some of the other hosts on BBS radio. Abundance, and what was there one host? I love her. She's just wonderful. She talks about the giggly Buddha. That just made me laugh in a good way, mind you, in a very good way. Anyway, I hope you have something to be thankful for, a lot to be thankful for. We're going to be talking about that a little bit and whether or not you talk politics at your Thanksgiving table. But first, one of our features. Dun, 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 dun. We're going to have to get some music for that. Little Bites of Big Issues. This week, what I have that encompasses Little Bites of Big Issues is my new favorite award ceremony. You know, Hollywood has tons of awards. They constantly are congratulating themselves. I guess now they should be congratulating themselves for their prolific, I guess we could call it an orgy of sexual abuse allegations, because it is indeed an orgy. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. However, I do mean it in a slightly cheeky way. So Hollywood deserves plenty of awards, but they're constantly congratulating themselves. And so some of you know that I put the Judeo in Judeo-Christian. I am indeed a proud Jewish person and a rare conservative, although, you know, like a lot of conservatives, I like to think for myself. I don't always agree with fellow conservatives. I don't always agree with Republicans. But as a Jewish person, I decided that we needed new awards because there's just so many of them that would fit into this category. And boy, oh boy, this week, we've got them. And it's called the Chutzpah of the Year Awards. Now, if those of you who don't know what the word chutzpah means, chutzpah is a Yiddish word which has made it into the American lexicon. Used to be that only, you know, my parents and people in the Jewish community used it, but now you hear it everywhere because it's Yiddish is a wonderful language. Chutzpah and Yiddish is the only language where phlegm is a consonant. So chutzpah has a wonderful definition, which can be found in The Joys of Yiddish by Leo Rosten. If you want to learn something about Yiddish and why it's such a rich and entertaining language, then go to The Joys of Yiddish by Leo Rosten. So the definition of chutzpah, according to Leo Rosten, is as follows. That quality enshrined in a man who, having killed his mother and his father, throws himself on the mercy of the court because he's an orphan. Now, unfortunately, that's not a joke, because that actually happened. The Menendez brothers actually did do that. There's some kind of a cable show right now talking about the Menendez case. And they did indeed say, well, they used the abused child excuse, but far as I know, a lot of abused children, thank God, didn't didn't take matters into their own hands and decide that they should murder their parents because they were abused. It's a tricky little delineation. I'm being irreverent, but nonetheless, we have the Chutzpah of the Year Awards. I love saying that. Everyone who's listening, say that out loud. Chutzpah. Now, don't say it to anybody close by because you don't want to catch a cold and have it, you know, spit in their eye. But yes, you have to chutzpah. All right. So the Chutzpah of the Year Awards are as follows. I've got six of them, and I've got the fifth runner-up in politics. Don't hit the microphone, Karen. And that is as follows. Fifth runner-up, dun-dun-dun-dun, is Democrats spending a year accusing Donald J. Trump of Russian collusion with no facts while being knee-deep in Russian collusion, which is just amazing, isn't it? I mean, for a year, they spent trying to accuse Donald Trump of collusion with the Russians, and yet the Democrats have, you guessed it, they've been colluding with the Russians. The Uranium One deal I've been threatening to talk about every single week here on Spouting Off, and every week I get deterred and derailed from doing so because it seems overwhelming. It seems overwhelming because there is so much to this story. So we're not going to do it here. However, if you're a fan, I am and I'm not. It depends on the issue. It depends on the time. Sean Hannity of Fox News has been at the forefront of this investigation of Uranium One deal. Peter Schweitzer wrote a book on the Clintons and just some of their corruption. But it took Sean Hannity a board and 20 minutes to actually describe and explain the nasty, gnarly, ugly kind of connections going on with Uranium One. But I'm hoping that the story has legs and that people will understand more and more about Uranium One. Basically, in a nutshell, there is no nutshell for this story. But in a nutshell, how do you even describe this? 20% of our uranium was sold to the Russians, and $145 million ended up in the Clintons' coffers. That's one of about five different scandals and payoffs and payola. And this is some ugly, nasty stuff. So when they talk about the swamp, it's the swamp. What really takes chutzpah, to bring us back to the point, is the fact that people can accuse others of with great fervor and moral indignation when they themselves are doing it. And we're finding that everywhere. We're finding it in the sexual abuse scandals where we've been watching person after person. We'll get to that in the second half hour. But you just wouldn't think that people, to use a very old cliche, people who are living in a very shaky glass house would be running around accusing everybody else of exactly what they're doing. But, you know, a certain segment of liberals really do have no shame. So I waxed philosophic there. The fourth runner-up, which I thought was rich. And by the way, the definition of chutzpah has a lot to do with just an off-the-wall gall. That's what chutzpah really means. I've always thought good chutzpah, there's good chutzpah and bad chutzpah. But good chutzpah means you're gutsy, you got guts, you're going to be persistent. But bad chutzpah is the kind we mentioned with Leo Rosten. The fourth runner-up is Joe Biden calling the Trump era the most dangerous times in modern history. Now, let that sink in for a minute. Joe Biden, who has apparently some sexual indiscretions of his own, pawing little girls and being watched by the media, the mainstream media, not saying anything because after all, he's a Democrat, so he has nothing to worry about. Nowadays, it's a little different because the Democrats are eating their own in this particular subject matter. I'm still have a lot of theories as to why that is. But Joe Biden calling the Trump era among the most dangerous, really? Is he going to still feel that way when economic optimism is not at a 17-year high, but maybe a 25-year high? I mean, Trump and the list of his accomplishments in 10 months is staggering, and people are starting to write about it. Unfortunately, the mainstream media has done everything they could to avoid the subject, but honestly, Joe Biden is on very, very shaky ground there. Okay, the third runner-up is something that just happened today. Now, some of you know that I'm broadcasting to you from the middle of the country, flyover country in both Colorado and Wyoming. I wasn't going to mention that, but it's important because Colorado is fascinating in its politics. It's got free weed. It's got Governor Hickenlooper, and Wyoming is very interesting because while part of Wyoming is trying to be like Colorado, we hope Wyoming stays as far away from being like Colorado as it possibly can. Nonetheless, we have a United States Congresswoman by the name of Diana DeGette, who made national news today when she joined the enormous list of women accusing others of sexual assault, sexual harassment. For liberals, it all sort of gets lumped together, which is one of my complaints, one of my criticisms, is that liberals don't know the difference between a punch in the face and hacking off your head. Liberals don't seem to know the difference between sexual talk, inappropriate talk, and inappropriate sexual action. To them, it's all sort of lumped together. And their discrimination of those really pretty much depends on if you're a Republican or a Democrat. Now, however, we're seeing something new and different. And I keep telling you, I'm teasing you, that I have theories as to why that is. But that's never been the case. None of these stories ever made it to the mainstream media. And you have to wonder, everybody, it was the worst kept secret in the world that some of these guys, people knew in Hollywood, people knew in Washington, and let's not even talk about, which we are going to talk about if we have time, Bill Clinton, the head abuser. It's not just sexual harassment with Bill Clinton. It was rape. Rape. It was rape. We had a rapist in the White House. That was what got me involved in politics. So to be doing talk radio at a time when Bill Clinton is suddenly having a comeuppance, it's not a far stretch to recognize that the comeuppance that Bill Clinton is getting is because it's now politically expedient and the left wants to off the Clintons, politically, that is. They want to finally get rid of them once and for all. But they've been protecting these people for decades. Decades they have. So when, you see, I'm getting going here, but when the New York Times puts out an article just a week ago, I'll get back to Diana to get in a minute. When they put out an article that says, I believe Juanita, I just have to, that should be on the list of Chutzpah of the Year awards, because we should have a hashtag, everybody within the sound of my voice, put out a hashtag that says, we always believed in Juanita. We always believed Juanita. Where were you? Well, we know where they were. They were lying, they were cheating, and they were completely covering up for Clinton because he was their guy. He was their bubba. So Bill Clinton committed a heck of a lot more than locker room talk. We'll get back to Juanita Broderick because that lady, she does have, she has a very soft spot in my heart. getting back to Diana DeGette, and there is a connection here, because when I did get politically active, I didn't know what to do. I was so horrified. I thought that was the worst that we could ever have in politics. I was unfortunately naively wrong. We could do even worse. But at that time, Diana DeGette, who took over for Pat Schroeder, that is one of the safest, that is the safest state representative district in all of Colorado, pretty much. Anybody who takes that seat can take it for a lifetime if they want to. Pat Schroeder did, and now Diana DeGette did. But here is why Diana DeGette gets the third runner-up for the Chutzpah of the Year award. When she accused, and you can find this all over your newspapers today, she accused a former Democrat congressman of assaulting her while they were both serving in the House. Must have been 25 years ago. I don't know. In an appearance on MSNBC's Meet the Press Daily, DeGette said the former Representative Bob Filner, Democrat from California, at one point tried to pin her in an elevator and forcibly kiss her. Now, what this article doesn't say, but what I read in my newspaper, was that when she was interviewed, she said, "Well, you know, it's very, very sad, very awful," I paraphrase, "but what really worries me are the interns." Let that sink in. Chutzpah of the Year. Diana DeGette decided 20 years too late that interns might be vulnerable to savvy male misbehaving politicians, right? But at that time, while she wasn't in that seat, she wasn't too worried about interns some 20-some years ago. And suddenly she's worried about interns, the naive and vulnerable young women who go to work for powerful and very slimy politicians. So that takes chutzpah. Second runner-up. We have Hillary Clinton herself saying the GOP politicized the AG's office. I'm sorry. That's just so funny. That was her excuse for when someone asked her about Uranium One. She very wittily, as she does, explained to all of us little people that what's really going on here is that Trump has politicized the AG's office. The AG's office was politicized long before Trump, and it was under Hillary. So, yeah, think about that. That is some chutzpah there. First runner-up of the Chutzpah of the Year Awards goes to Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell, the mumbling, bumbling, oh my God, what a man. This is who represents the establishment Republicans. And he could not wait to stand up and tell a U.S. senator of his own party who was accused of sexual improprieties 40 years ago and has denied them all. So we don't have enough information. Could be true, could be false. Lots of stuff coming out about Roy Moore. Lots and lots of stuff coming out about Roy Moore. But Mitch McConnell and the entire army of establishment Republicans could not wait to call for the stepping down of Judge Roy Moore. Why? Well, it just happens to be that Mitch McConnell put millions upon millions of dollars into his opponent's race, and he lost. So the Chutzpah of the Year award goes to Mitch McConnell when asked, well, who are you going to do? What are you going to do to replace Judge Roy Moore 5 weeks before an election? What are you going to do? He said, well, Luther Strange would be good. I'm telling you, you cannot make this stuff up. You can't. It's like, oh, well, you know, the guy I've been spending $30 million and I lost the race. It's kind of like the Democrats saying, well, who are you going to call to replace Donald Trump If you impeach him, which, by the way, the Democrats are trying to do now to impeach Donald Trump, who are you going to call? And they're all going to say, well, Hillary Clinton would be good. Suddenly they say, you know, all that sexual harassment stuff, that lying, that cheating, all that. We didn't mean that. No, let's go ahead and run Hillary Clinton. No, they're actually done with Hillary Clinton. It's too bad it took them 25 years to figure it out. And they had to settle all the rest of us with the debacle that was the Clintons. I don't need to give you chapter and verse because it's just so sad that they had to drag the country through the mud. But you know, it wouldn't be the first time politicians dragged us all through the mud. Okay, we've got one more. And boy, I'm just spouting off to beat the band today. It's 20 minutes after 2, and I've only gotten through the little bites of big issues. Grand prize of the Chutzpah of the Year Award goes to the GOP establishment for telling us they will expel Judge Roy Moore should he win the Senate seat. You think I'm repeating myself, but I'm not. While it was revealed that the Congress has a multi-million dollar slush fund for, you guessed it, sexual harassment suits. Now that takes chutzpah. Maybe Engineer Doug will have to do biennial Chutzpah of the Year Awards, or maybe monthly Chutzpah of the Year Awards, and we'll have to get some music to go along with that. Maybe kind of a Jewish Fiddler on the Roof theme for that. That's what we're going to have to do. It's just astounding, really. The amount of chutzpah in politics today is quite entertaining and fun. Now, I am going to say the number if you have a mind to call. I would love to hear from you. Like to hear about your Thanksgiving Day dinner. Are you going to talk about politics? Let's talk about that for just a minute. But first, if you'd like to get a hold of me, you can call me at 888-627-6008. Or you can call me direct at 323-744-4831. And for those of you listening on the podcast, you can't call me at that number because this will be taped. Right now, it's live, but then it'll be taped. Okay. So are we going to have politics for our Thanksgiving dinner this year or not? That's what I want to know. Now, it's a fascinating thing. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke about, actually, I think it might have even been last week that I spoke about this. I found a couple of articles about Thanksgiving. One is this: politically divided families cut their Thanksgiving celebration short by a half an hour, according to cell phone data. Who's taking data of our cell phones to see how long we... Oh, well, I don't want to go there because then my head will truly explode. But apparently when there's politically divided families, they cut dinner short. But here's one of the more interesting studies, and I did share this with you, but it fits so perfectly with Thanksgiving. So Cato is a libertarian think tank. And here's what the Cato Institute came out with. The Cato 2017 Free Speech and Tolerance Survey, a new national poll of 2,300 U.S. adults, found that 71% of Americans believe that political correctness has silenced important discussions that our society needs to have. Consequences are personal. 58% of Americans believe that the political climate, that's a lot different than climate change, that's political climate, prevents them from sharing their own political beliefs. Now, this is the kicker. Democrats are unique, however, in that a slim majority, 53%, don't feel the need to self-censor. Conversely, a strong majority of Republicans, 73%, and independents, 58%, say they keep some political beliefs to themselves. It's not hard to figure out what's going on here. Democrats are the ones that shut everybody else up, and they're the ones that don't feel as shut up themselves. You get that? So here are people who feel perfectly comfortable lecturing the rest of us on their political beliefs. And believe me, I have had it happen where I was not. I am a political junkie. I cop to that. I am a news and political junkie. But there are a lot of times when I don't bring it up. But sure enough, especially during the Obama years, again and again and again, I would find myself in an environment of people. Now, I have to admit that I have moved in many, many, many liberal circles in my life in the careers that I have chosen. I was an entertainer, and then I was a social worker, and I still do that sort of thing from time to time. And so I have a very checkered past. And those are areas, plus being female and being Jewish, and I used to live in New York. These are all areas that have been dominated by liberals. So liberals feel very, very comfortable in spouting off, there's that word again, on politics with others because, see, if they like you, they figure that you're going to have to share their politics because, well, if you expressed a Republican view, well, then they would just have to kill you or hate you. Forget the killing, that's different, but they might just have to hate you. And because they like you, they figure that you must obviously be a liberal. Now, as an aside, a lot of people don't like me, and that's okay. Some people on BBS don't much like me because I'm very opinionated, and I don't even apologize for my opinions, unless I've truly offended people. But even then, you know, one of my favorite phrases is the Constitution doesn't guarantee your right to be not to be offended. But be that as it may, we're talking about Thanksgiving. See, I always do come back, and it's fascinating to me that at Thanksgiving tables when Obama was in office, liberals were quite comfortable lecturing the rest of us on the joys of Obama and Obamacare and pajama boys and all the rest of the liberal claptrap. Now that we have Donald Trump in office, we're finding a lot of articles that are telling people, don't talk politics at your Thanksgiving Day table, especially don't listen to those mean, nasty, cold-hearted conservatives, those selfish, racists, homophobes, bigots, because you don't want to be listening to anything that they have to say. Here is my humble suggestion for you, okay? Take a lesson from Donald Trump. You don't have to be Donald Trump, but take a lesson, because Donald Trump is teaching all of us how to be who we are, speak up for what we think, and to take the slings and arrows. Is Donald Trump perfect? Is he a saint? Is he a god? Heavens, no. But he has the skin of an armadillo. I have never seen anybody with such strength and willing to take so much hatred and vitriol at a time when he's taken it from both sides. And he's never gotten a free pass yet. When he announced for President of the United States, he got enormous heat, and he got heat from every single one of the Republican candidates eventually who tried to knock him off, couldn't do it. Then he got the Democrat machine and the Clinton machine. Then he got the Republican establishment machine, and he's still going. And yet, what do the Democrats do? They just filed articles of impeachment against Trump. You know, it scares me sometimes, but I say, do you know who you're dealing with? Good luck with that. So I'm not thinking that that's going to stop Donald Trump. Say a prayer for Donald Trump and his safety and his well-being, because he is taking a lot of slings and arrows in order to turn this country around. And when I say that, I mean from a cultural standpoint. He is making inroads into the culture in ways that will transcend and probably has already transcended the policy changes that he's trying to make. Watch him carefully, the way he takes on the culture. He takes on the NFL. He takes on the liberal elites. He takes on the Republican establishment. And he's still going strong and doing so in a way. I'm going to make this one last point, Mr. Producer, and then we're going to go to a break. People wonder what's different about this sexual harassment orgy of allegations here. And I say, well, I think there's a lot going on. It's not, I like to look at nuance in things. I truly do believe that the very presence of Donald Trump and his unwillingness to act like an airbrushed, media-trained automaton that we find in politics today, both on the left and the right, has changed the tone in public. And suddenly people are deciding that it's time to tell whatever truth they have. Now, I don't think that Democrats have been moved by Donald Trump in that way, but somehow when Donald Trump got elected, people said, you know what? We can tell the truth about what we always knew. We always knew these politicians were lying sacks of excrement. We knew that. We always knew that. And yet, here we are acting as if they're respectful statesmen. We knew what was going on. So what I have to say is that liberals are looking for a way to blame Donald Trump for their problems. Hollywood has always been a cesspool before and after this little orgy of sexual allegations, many of them quite real and quite appalling. But they want to blame Donald Trump, and I say to them, for once, I found something with which I agree with you. In many respects, Donald Trump is responsible. He has ushered in an era of tell it like it is and let the chips fall where they may. We're going to come right back on Spouting Off. You're listening to BBS Radio Station 1, and I'm your host, Karen Cataline.
Hi, I'm Elaine, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is Hillsdale College President Larry Arnn on the importance of the presidential oath of office.
Members of Congress and federal judges take an oath to the Constitution, but the Constitution prescribes the exact words of the oath only for the president. The American presidency was a new and powerful office created at the Constitutional Convention of 1787. Nothing like it existed in any other constitution in history. It was designed to allow certain virtues, decision, activity, secrecy, dispatch, things like that. And they were thought to be essential to executive power, especially in a crisis. But despite this immense power, the president is not so powerful as the Constitution itself. That is why presidents must pledge to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, and why it is the duty of the people to ensure that they do so.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To join the national conversation on the Constitution, go to constitutionminute.com.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
And we're back. This is Karen Cataline in the big chair, your host for Spouting Off. And we have a little slogan on Spouting Off. You're better off when you're spouting off. And I actually have a theory about that. I have a theory about everything. But one of my theories is that if you learn how to use your words, and that's what we teach little kids, right? Use your words and don't hit. If people could express their anger, their frustration in words, even hit a bag or something and learn to channel their anger, we might have less violence in the world. Unfortunately, there's a lot of places where people are told not to express themselves, not to talk about what's bothering them. Like Aunt Emma, you can go to Aunt Emma and you can tell her what's bothering you. But I really think it's important for people to be able to have an outlet. I feel incredibly blessed to have this outlet and the various outlets that I am developing to be able to spout off to all of you about various issues of the day. Excuse me, my cough button doesn't work, so I'm just going to go ahead and go for it. So what I'd like to tackle in our second half of our show, First, let me say that I'm doing some fill-in talk radio and putting some of the podcasts on my website. So if you'd like to hear what local talk radio sounds like in the Wyoming, Colorado area, and lots and lots of it, because I've been doing lots and lots of it lately and just very, very, very grateful, you can go to my website, www.karencataline.com. If you know how to spell my name, you'll be able to find me both on Facebook, Twitter, all of that. So I went into the studio yesterday and sat down with this loads and loads of material to talk with. I was filling in for a very wonderful host named Jimmy Lakey, who is off in Africa feeding orphans and clothing orphans. So he epitomizes the selfish, mean, racist, bigoted conservative Republican. He's a Christian conservative, and he's actually putting his money where his mouth is. And of course, you never hear about those kinds of things. So I have enormous respect for Jimmy Lakey, and I was honored to fill in for him the last couple of days. Nonetheless, I came into the studio, and what had happened the night before, late at night, Charles Manson died. Well, that was a pretty big deal. Thank goodness I'm learning how to switch gears. And I said, you know what? I got to talk about this. This is big. This is huge. This is important. People have been waiting for Charles Manson to die. Now, you see, in the Jewish religion, we never cheer someone's death, even someone very, very evil or who has done evil things. When Yasser Arafat died, you did not find Israelis cheering and shooting guns in the air because Yasser Arafat was dead. We just—it's just not what we do. I wouldn't say it's karma. You could call it bad Jewish karma. We just don't do that. So, I don't cheer the death of someone, but let's just say I'm not going to be grieving either. Charles Manson had been kept alive on the taxpayer dime for 47, 48 years and benefit, if you could call it that. The repeal of the death penalty in California right after he was convicted of the Tate LaBianca murders and was then his sentence was commuted, along with the other Manson killers. What is fascinating about this story to me, and there is so much, you can talk about the death penalty, and that is a tremendous talk radio fodder. But what especially fascinates me, and I did post a blog both on my website under articles and also on the BBS radio website. I've suddenly discovered blogs on BBS radio. So I'm very, very happy to post something. And basically, it was just a bullet point thing that I've had for a while. And what fascinates me both as a master's level social worker person, but also as just a political watcher, is the idea of cults. I've read a lot of books about Scientology and about cults of various sorts, including the Jim Jones cult. And it fascinates me what it is about a charismatic leader that can persuade people, usually young, vulnerable people who are lonely or who are looking for great purpose in their life. Many of them have very noble goals. Or maybe they're depressed or unhappy, or there's not anybody loving them in their life enough, or who knows. But to persuade those people to do and behave in ways that they would ordinarily never do, including murder absolute strangers, to break into the houses of Sharon Tate and the LaBiancas and murder them in the most gruesome of ways. Those of us a little older remember that case very well. People in California remember it vividly, vividly well. There were books and books and books written about it, about the case and the trial. When I started to study cults and study what some of them have in common, I was struck by many of the similarities of cults in general. Now, some of them, you know, these are just my observations, and I hope you're going to follow along with this. I'm probably not going to read them all. You can read them at my website, www.karencataline.com. But I was struck by it. I used as my primary example Scientology, but you can also use, and there are variances, but here are some things they have in common. A cult often will demonize those who dare to disapprove or disagree. Scientology does not allow its members to read anything negative about Scientology and completely considers the person who's giving them information or whatever a non-person. We won't go into each and every one of these, but it is fascinating. Wait, let me say why I did this. Why I did this was because when I studied cults, Scientology, I was struck by the similarity between it and Manson and the cult of liberalism. Now, for those of you who are a little ultra sensitive, I'm not saying that all liberals could be Charles Manson or that liberals are mass murderers or evil. But liberalism tends to lead to some very, very, very bad places. And I'm going to continue to read these and you tell me if you see any similarities. A cult and the cult of liberalism isolates, mocks, and bullies its enemies. Enemies are defined as anyone who could pose a threat to the organization. Think about that in liberalism and how they bully their political enemies, call them racist, bigots, homophobes. It's starting not to work, but it still stings. People still try to say, well, no, I'm not, and told differently. But that is one of the tactics. It's all about control and enriching itself, the organization. It's marketed as offering freedom, altruism, and a way to help the world. But really, it's about power. Everything exists to keep the cult going. Everything, including the ideology. If you look at Scientology, it's all a giant sham. I direct you to one of the most fascinating shows on television today, a former Scientologist, Leah Remini, who's in her second season of Exposing Scientology. It took great courage. You want to talk about courage? Women who were pinned in an elevator 40 years ago, not so much courage to come forward 40 years, 30 years, 20 years later. But for Leah Remini, who was followed and harassed, true harassment, Scientology will go after anyone that speaks negatively about it. It is not tolerant of any kind of criticism. So she spent millions and millions of dollars in Scientology. So liberalism is much the same way. They want more and more and more and more of your money. And what does it exist for? Not to help the people that they claim to help. It exists to keep the cult going. It requires secrecy to hide its true beliefs and goals. Do you think Obama would have gotten elected if he said, I want you to elect me, I'm a card-carrying communist? I don't think so. Now, do we actually know everything that Obama believes? No. But over 8 years, we got a pretty good idea that he was a sympathizer of hardcore socialism, but he wasn't going to run on that. He didn't run on that. Those of us who knew looked at him and went, oh my God, we're in trouble. And we were. I have a caller. Oh, how cool. I don't have my camera on or whatever, so I could see that I have a caller. But Doug, my producer, tells me I have a caller. Caller, hold on for a minute. I'm going to give one more of these, and then I'm going to take your call. Okay? Here's one I just love, and there's a whole bunch of them, bullet points. You just read that and give me some feedback. Worship celebrity and treat certain people more special than anyone else, so that they can perpetrate the cult. Caller, welcome to Spouting Off and on BBS Radio Station 1. You're with Karen Cataline. Go ahead.
Hey, Karen, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. What's your name?
It's Barney.
Hey, Barney.
Okay, now listen. So let me give you some compliments here. When I was told who you were before, your name, I couldn't put the name with the voice, but now I know who you are, and you're a great caller, but you're even a pretty damn good host, so I'm glad you're here, and I was going to control myself. I wasn't going to call. I was going to hold back, but you said, me and my big mouth, you said too many things, so I got to skip my...
No. Like, go ahead. Spout off, my dear. Okay. Spout off, Barney. Go for it.
So, for starters, you talked about the Palestinian leader, and I'll have to... I'm kind of a little bit ashamed. I'm not a very good Christian. But when that helicopter was trying to land with his body in the box, I was hoping that they would have just kicked it out. And I don't treat dead people badly, but I was all for those soldiers.
Well, they're already dead, Barney, so you know why treat them badly.
Yeah, I know, but I just, you know, I believe there's a saying on how a society treats their dead says a lot about them. But I think that we could change it and say how a society treats their animals. Then we're talking, because But anyway, we're not going to go to. But I'm one of those people that would have been more than happy if they just would have booted him out on the ground, because they wouldn't let him land the helicopter. And I think it was a French helicopter that was doing that. But going back to what's his name, the evil Manson. If I'm not mistaken, he had a little help with LSD. So I think that helped along. But let me. Since you're bringing up religion, and I agree with you 100% Scientology, but a lot of these other religions to a lesser degree. But I'd even go further than that. It's easy to get the leader to suck these people in. And I'm not trying to put down. I'm not going to mention the religion with an M, but they still haven't apologized for the Mountain Meadow massacre. And if you Google that, it was awful. But they kind of do the same thing. They beat up on the Catholics. You know, they recruit people. They'll come to your door. Well, maybe it's not as intense now, but they did this in the 80s and the 90s. They'd knock on your door. They'd find out you're Catholic. And I was raised Catholic. I don't agree with a lot of the crap. I don't get the incense thing. I don't get the Latin. But I'm a pretty good person because of the way I was raised. And I'm going to thank the Catholic bringing up made me a better person. But more important with these religions, I don't think it's so much the leader, it's the people they get. They know who to go after. They, just like the pedophile or the molester, they know by looking at the crowd of kids which one that they can latch on to. And I don't know what it is. They know.
Well, let's talk about Manson for a while. In the 60s, in the late 60s, Manson was picking off the most, he was picking off girls he was attracted to because he was sleeping with all of them. But he also was picking off girls that were lost, who were confused, who had problems at home, had been sexually abused, were looking for purpose. Yep. And then he exploited them. Well, very frankly, that's what liberalism does. It exploits the most vulnerable and tells them, you know what? We'll take care of you. You just trust us. We'll take care of you.
But that works, though, both. But it's not just liberals, though, Karen. It works with all this crap. Just like the evangel. And I don't want to get on the gay thing, but the evangel. I've got a brother that's a Bible thumper, and he's. Look, I don't care what people think about gays. I happen to think they're made this way. I have no problems with them. I don't want them shoving their crap down my throat. You know, they're whatever, but I don't like the Democrats throwing their crap.
I can make a joke there, Barney, but I'm going to let that pass because I'm feeling generous today. It's Thanksgiving.
But my brother, no matter how much I try to say to him, hey, you know, you just got to leave the gays alone. You just got to leave it alone. Look at what the evangelicals do.
Wait. Let me argue with you a bit here because I love talk radio.
Okay.
And arguing is what we do. We love to argue.
Yeah.
Let me just say.
I didn't expect you to.
Can you hang with me for a minute? Because I want to take issue with you on this. Okay?
Yes, ma'am.
I was in the theater for many, many, many years. And so I don't have a religious problem with gay people at all. But I believe that the gay political agenda has been created and co-opted once again by the left in order to stick it to Christians. I'm not a Christian.
You're absolutely right.
So I can say this with all innocence. And I think you're in Colorado, and I know that, I don't know, tell me what you think about the Jack Phillips case.
Which one is that?
Jack Phillips is the Masterpiece case, which...
Oh, okay. You're not going to like what, because me and my buddy Hugh probably disagree a little bit on this.
All right, hold on. Bring everyone up to speed. Barney, hold on a minute.
Okay, I can bring
everybody up to speed on what that is, and everybody will know. This is a case out of Colorado that is going to the Supreme Court in this coming month, in December, in which a gay couple went into a bakery to ask for a custom wedding cake. Gay marriage was not legal at the time. And Jack Phillips said, I'll sell you anything off the shelf. I'll sell you cakes. I'll sell you cookies. But I won't make you a custom wedding cake because I don't want to participate. Go someplace else. And he was dragged into court, dragged through the mud, lost 40% of his business, and that case is going to the Supreme Court. Go ahead, Barney. Tell me what's going to
be okay, I know who he is. And let me agree with you on the agenda with the liberals. Just like the NFL players hijack the BLM movement. I actually think I can relate to the BLM. Some of the people that are decent, I understand where they're coming from. But just like in this case, now just hear me out on the cake maker case. What I would have done as a cake maker when the gay couple went in, and I'd really like to know the particulars of what they wanted on the cake. Because if I'm a cake maker and you walk into my cake shop and you're Charles Manson and you have a swastika on your forehead, and you want a Nazi cake, and I'm Jewish, I'm not going to make your cake. And I think that I would have grounds to do that. In the case of the gays, if they just walked in there and said, I want a wedding cake, but I want Adam and Adam on top of the cake, all the cake maker would have to say was, we don't have Adam and Adam. We have Adam and Eve, and that's who goes on the top of our cake.
Okay, let me...
With the cake maker, okay?
Let me stop you for a minute. I'm going to concede one point in that the gay couple was so loaded for bear that they didn't wait. They said F you and walked out. And that is a fascinating issue with which the court will have to struggle. But that being said, you piqued my interest when you just said what I would have done. And this is the fundamental core issue about freedom in the United States of America. And that is that your freedom is protected when you can tolerate somebody else handling something different than you would, and you would protect that person's freedom to say no in that context. And what we are talking about is the creative use of his talent, not selling
the cake
on the shelf.
Let me say this, though. But let me say this. What I'm trying to say is, but I would also say to you, if I were an atheist and a Christian, I just don't think if I'm in the public arena I don't think I should discriminate against you. It'd be no, and just hear me out. I'm not trying to inflame, but it
I'm hearing
no
you out, Barney. But we do have about a minute and a half before we have to end the show. Okay, but listen, please go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Bottom line is, I don't have a right to discriminate against you if a black and a white woman come in there and they want a black man on the cake and a white woman. In a way, I understand if the two gays, I know they were loaded for bear. We never got to the particulars, and it's all about words. And we had a U.S. attorney that I'm sure was appointed by Obama, so it went fast track right to the, you know, it was on a fast track to the Supreme Court anyway. And the guy went through, well, that wasn't right. I'm just
okay, we're going to have to wrap this up, but I'm going to ask you to please, please call me next week. Not about about anything. You are a wonderful caller, and I'm going to have to let you go now and wrap up the show.
All right, I hope I didn't run any of your listeners off. Take care.
What's that? What did you say? I missed it. He's gone. That's too bad. I don't know what he said, but to me, a caller, especially one who disagrees, is what really great talk radio is all about. So we hope that if you like the show, you'll tell your friends so that we can have more and more big discussions about the big, big issues of the day. He's got me going now, and I would love to continue this, but the show is wrapping up. So I'm going to say goodbye for now. I'm going to thank Doug and Don and BBS Radio. Station One, if you'd like to get a hold of me or pass along our information, go to www.karencataline.com. And I will see you next week on BBS Radio for more of Spouting Off.